Okay. Turn to Matthew chapter 10. Continuing on in our series, we're going right through the book of Matthew chapter 10, because this is the chapter of Jesus sending out the disciples. And so you look at all the different things that he puts into his men as they're going out. They give a very good picture of things that you need to know about pioneering. So this class is called the Master's Class on Pioneering. That's the series. And today we're going to deal with a practical issue of what do you do when people don't want you? What do you do when people reject you in the ministry? And so that's what we're going to talk about. Matthew 10, I need to get some verses. Brian, read for me Matthew 10, 21 through 25. Neil, 1 Kings 22, verse 8. Where are we at? Come, these are all. I won't read whole verses, just portions. Okay, let's read Matthew 10, 21 through 25.
Now, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly I say unto you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher, and a servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of his household?
Okay, this lesson is called Rejection and Persecution. Let's talk about the realities of ministry here. There are numbers of statements that are made in this passage that are often used for the Christian life in general, but remember the context, which gives you understanding. He's talking about workers going in the ministry. So, this scripture speaks about the reality of ministry, of things that are painful. He speaks, first of all, about betrayal. Verse 21 says, brother shall deliver brother. So this is talking about people who should show love toward us for various reasons, because of our connection, because of what you've done for them. And instead, the Bible says that people will, instead of showing love, they will violate. And this is just a reality of ministry. Life is filled with jerks. You do meet jerks in life, but it is more painful when it's people that you have personally loved. You have personally invested time. You've helped them financially, and yet they still do wrong to you. And that's, from time to time that will catch me off guard, to be like, but all I've done is be nice to them. All I've done is help them. That's just the way it is. It's betrayal. Then it speaks about another painful reality, and that is unfair attacks. Verse 22 says, you'll be hated by all men for my name's sake. And so this is not talking about a lack of people skills. If you are rude to people, you can cause yourself some of your own problems. And I have done that in life. But this is saying, for doing right, assuming that you're not being offensive, or anything else. So he says, this is for my name's sake. So one of the issues in ministry is that you have people that they will get upset for saying what is right. There's a old saying, is a bumper sticker, and it says that the truth will set you free, but first it'll make you miserable. And so not everything that you say from the pulpit is welcomed. Are people cheering, saying thank you? There are things that people don't want to hear the truth, and that's just human nature. 1 Kings 22, verse 8.
So the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, there's still one man, Micaiah the son of Imlah, by whom we may inquire of the Lord. But I hate him, because he does not prophesy good concerning me, but evil. And Jehoshaphat said, let not the king say such things.
Okay, so here this king is saying, I hate this prophet, not because he's a jerk, not because he's personally offended me, because he says things I don't like. And that's just the reality, is that you if you don't tell people the truth, then you destroy them. That'd be like a doctor knowing they have cancer, but I don't want to make you feel bad, so I'm not going to say it. And so that's just part of it. And so there sometimes is a pushback. People are angry at you for touching on their pet sin, for preaching the truth. And then, of course, doing what's right. This is part of ministry. And part of, I want you to catch this. Jesus is preparing men for ministry. He says, when you do the right thing, there will be pushback. There will be people that will be upset about that, when you refuse to allow carnality in the church, and when you enforce moral discipline. That's often a subject that is painful, is that we don't allow people to be fornicators and whormongers and still come to church. And when we discover that, we take action. And of course, in certain circumstances, the action is that we put them out of the church for a time of discipline. So anytime you do that, they have friends, they have family. It's like, why did this is my child, this is my sister, my cousin, my daughter, whatever it might be, son. And so that causes people to be upset. And that is part of ministry. You have to factor in. If you have to have every single person like you in life, I would not recommend the ministry for you, because it's just not going to work. That's Jesus is preparing. And sometimes we get that. I asked a young pastor one time, after he had been out for a while, is what's been the hardest lesson for you? And he said, learning what people are like. What he was talking about, it was a shock to him that people would be upset with you for saying or doing what's right. Evangelism. What we do, we evangelize, and our style of evangelism is confrontational. We go where people are. We tell them the truth about their sin. We call sin for what it is. Outreaches, remember the saying is, find a crowd or create a crowd. We go where there's an existing crowd. They were hoping to have a nice day at the park, and instead they're confronted with their sin. They were hoping to have a nice parade, and there was Jesus on the cross. And so that causes problems. So those are realities. Jesus says you have to factor that in. So let's talk secondly about damaged workers. So why does Jesus have to tell people this? Why does he have to warn them in some ways? Is because betrayal, unfair attacks, persecution, rejection, those can affect the worker in negative ways. So one of the things that happens is you lose perspective. Is that when you have, people in the city coming against you, people in the church coming against you, whatever it might be, you can lose perspective. Perspective is seeing things in their proper size, right? And so one of the things that happens is you begin to think, I'm the only one. It's like everybody else who's in the ministry, they're loved. All their people love them. Everybody says nice things about me, but I got people that they hate me. And so you can take that personal, like, what did I do wrong? I must be, a terrible pastor, if anybody should be. That's why Jesus puts in verse 24, when this happens, remember, a disciple is not above his master. So he said, if it happened to Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, how do you think you're going to escape? Right? Jesus, who was love personified, and yet he's just recognizing that we have to face that. Again, I understand that people who have, they need to learn people skills. They can be offensive and just say, yeah, well, they did it to Jesus. But Jesus was also not a jerk. So remember that. Write that down. Jesus was not a jerk, so neither should you be. Another result of these realities is fear. Verse 26, so he says, do not fear them. Do not fear them. This is one of the interesting things that new pastors have to learn as they discover that there can be intimidation. Various reasons. Their first time, some of the guys described to me the first time they're talking about money, because they know that some people are nervous about money. The first time they ever have to discipline somebody, the first time they have to, you know, confront sin, whatever it might be. So they're fearful. If you're afraid, then the temptation is to not speak and to not do right. So I'll just avoid those subjects. I'll only preach nice things. I'll never say anything that could be offensive in any way, or to change your actions. There are people that persecution comes, and so they're looking for a new way of evangelism. Well, if somebody gets upset because we go on the streets, how about let's not go on the streets? Let's just do Facebook campaigns, and that's it. Let's evangelize by social media. How convenient. Just sit at home sipping hot chocolate and winning the world by social media. So, but sometimes that is a desire to avoid reactions, negative reactions. So if you don't speak up, if you don't evangelize, if you don't tell the truth, then you are giving in to the strategy of hell. The proverb says, the fear of man brings a snare. That means you are trapped or restricted. So you know what you should do. I'm not, because you're afraid of people. I know what I should say, but I'm not. And that's you just have to understand that. So one of the greatest dangers in ministry is that your heart can change. It's a very interesting scripture, verse 22. He who endures till the end shall be saved. But remember the context. And again, as I said, these verses are often taken and used. There are true biblical principles. But he's actually writing to men of God, disciples who want to do a work for God. And he says, remember, he who endures to the end shall be saved, because he's recognizing something, that the danger in ministry when you get unfair attacks, rejection, different things, is that your heart can change. You can become something that is very, very unhealthy. You can become cynical. They say for preachers and policemen, one of the greatest problems they have is cynicism. Why? Because they deal with the worst of human nature. They deal with people who lie and are immoral and will treat you bad even though you do them right. And so one of the dangers is you become cynical. After you get burned, one of the hard parts is when someone has ripped you off and hurt you, then the next person, now they need help. You need to invest in them, but you start looking at it like, are you going to burn me? So cynicism is viewing people negatively. That's what you're doing. You're looking, this guy probably is not going to make it. That guy is a ripoff. That guy, you know, he's probably going to be a rebel. So the danger is then I'm not going to invest in anybody. I'm not going to get involved because we're trying to protect ourselves. In 1990, we had, for the very first time in our fellowship, we had a split. We had some men that had some influence, and they really, it was about power. They always, rebels have something they're complaining about that they say is not right, but really is they wanted to be in charge. They wanted power. So because of it, we had about 100 churches leave our fellowship, said we don't want to be a part of the fellowship anymore. It was, we had a pastor's business meeting when this was all going through, and people were attacking Pastor Mitchell, saying terrible things about him. And so he came, you've heard Pastor Mitchell tell this story, but he came to a conclusion is, if you can invest, they wouldn't even be saved if it wasn't for, you know, for him. You can invest money in them. You can help them get to a place of ministry, and then if they can leave, he said, then I won't plant churches anymore. It's not worth it. That's a danger, and you've heard him say that God spoke to him, is you do what's right and you leave it to me. But that's a danger. That's true in planting churches. That's true in working with new converts. That's true in every area of life. Jesus says you have to factor this in. Don't let your heart become cynical, first of all, and then secondly, don't become bitter. This is the second thing, is that you can become bitter. It's a terrible thing when the pastor or the pastor's wife hates the people in the church. That doesn't go well. I can tell you, a bitter pastor doesn't preach well. Everything is a vetch, and you know, it's different ways. So this is true. You can become bitter at God. Why did you call me into this situation that lets people treat me badly? So you can get mad at God. You can get mad at people. Get mad at the pastor. You know, I got men on the field. They get mad at me after people are treating them badly. I was like, I never treated you badly. I'm a nice guy. You can ask my wife. And so what happens is you have men, first of all, that they turn away from the call. Very, very common. I think the last time I knew a statistic is they say across America, this is not, you know, just our fellowship, but across America, there's more than 2,000 pastors who quit every week, quit the ministry completely. And of course, America's a big place, so factor that in. But nonetheless, this is very common. We do business. Some of our guys have done business with the Assembly of God. They have a finance arm, you know, like a bank. You can borrow money for churches. And so some of the guys said, it's very interesting. Every man who works there is a former pastor. Mm-hmm. They're not pastoring anymore. So they want to do something for God, but they can't hack pastoring anymore. They have allowed that, cause them to turn away. And then, of course, Jesus says, enduring to the end. You could, if you let bitterness in your heart, you could lose your salvation. Because it produces negative things. You let the devil in. That's why Ephesians says don't give place to the devil. Okay, survival tactics. So you have to think about this. First of all is you have to be aware of the possibility. Jesus is not trying to trick anybody in the ministry. He's not painting a rosy picture. You're going to go and everyone's going to love you and you're going to have lots of money and it's going to be easy. It's kind of interesting way of, guys, I'm going to send you out on this great adventure, and, you know, there are parts of it that really suck. Like, oh, boy. Sign me up. But he's doing this so it doesn't come as a shock. That's, you heard me use as an illustration before, is that they prepare pilots not just to fly in good weather. What happens if your engine quits? What happens when things go wrong? You got to be ready for that, so you don't just freeze and freak. So this is just sad part of life and ministry. Not everybody will like you. Not everybody's going to listen to you. Some are going to actively reject you, and some will betray and attack you. Be aware of that, so it's not a shock. Number two, don't take it personal. The painful part of working with troublesome people is they make it personal. They try and make it personal, and they'll do personal attacks and slander against you and whatever. But Jesus says, actually, verse 22, it's for my name's sake. This is one of the issues I've learned. It's no fun, but it's true. People who are wrestling with God, most people are not willing to point their finger in the sky and say, God, shut up, I don't want to do your will. They're not willing to do that. But they don't want to do the will of God, so what they do is, I would do the will of God if Pastor Greg was a better man, right? If the pastor was nicer, then I would do the will of, you know. So they're wrestling with sin, guilty people, attack others. That's you know, all these kinds of things. So in some ways, people who are upset with those in ministry are often, it's because they're upset with Jesus, the claims of his lordship that he's placing over their lives, and so they don't want to tell Jesus where to go, but they're willing to tell a man where to go. So he says, don't take it personal. And then also, I just throw this in, is that one of the things is that you have to factor in is that what people are going through, right? I got people that are going through hell. You know, they're wrestling with sickness, their kids are going off the rails, their business is failing, their finances and all that. And so then they come and they're not very nice to me. It's like, yeah, don't take it personal. Right there, guys, it's like, if I was married to her, I'd probably be mean too. that is a joke.
joke.
Okay. Third thing is, he says, wisdom sometimes is move along. And verse 23 is go to another place. They're rejecting you here. Go to another place. So this is very practical. And, he's saying if you are in a situation where people absolutely reject and attack you, he says, then that is a possibility of moving along. This is not speaking of people's tendency to run when there's anything unpleasant, okay? He's not saying if there's anything hard in life, run, move. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying find a new church because there's something you don't like. But there are situations. We've had guys that go to cities. They're getting zero response over time. It's like you're not going to stay there for 29 years beating your head against a wall. Doesn't make sense. And then there are various situations. So it doesn't make sense to obsess. It doesn't make sense to, you know, we care about the worker. There are people that sometimes they're in the situation. I wish they could work it out, but being honest, I'm looking at what's happening in them, happening in their wife, and I think your salvation's more important. Your future is more important. Let's move along. We'll make another plan. It'll work on. So moving on to other people, that's a possibility. Moving to another area, sometimes that's a possibility, another city. And again, I caution, this is not escapism. This is just common sense in balance. Final thing is you have to keep your heart right. Verse 22, he that endures till the end shall be saved. So you have to make up your mind when faced with negative things. You have to make up your mind that I am called by God. I'm not called by people. People didn't ask me to go in the ministry. They're not the ones who told me to do this. So therefore, in number, this works out in numbers of different ways. At the end of the day, I want to please God and not people. I've had people that pressure me. You don't ever, don't do that. But I got to answer to God. He's the one who called me, not you. Because you're upset and you're going to mad dog me in church. It's not going to change because you didn't call me. So I'm going to stand before God and answer for my calling, knowing, and I want to be able to look God in the eye and say, I did my best. I did your will. So then the other thing is I will not allow myself to become bitter and cynical. And that is if I recognize that, there are times where I have to intently bring that to God. I cannot give place. I do not, my wife and I, this is something that we practice. We do not, when we're in private, talk bad about everybody in church. Even though there could be lots of things that irritate me, we don't get, hey, did you see that guy? And I can't believe. That's not healthy. That's not healthy for us. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to live that way. We don't eat people for lunch on the way home from church. That's not healthy. And nor do I with my pastor friends. I don't have, you know, bitch sessions with my pastor friends about everything that I don't like in the ministry and every person who's irritated me. There are times we discuss issues that maybe, you know, you're trying to work out that are trickier than usual, but those are decisions that I made. I don't want to be a cranky old man, right? I don't want to lose my calling. I don't want to hate the ministry, get into every sermon. You know, get in the pulpit and make every sermon, let me tell you what's wrong with you jerks. I'm not going to live that way. But the answer is not quit the ministry. I got to keep my heart right. There are times when I recognize I need God. I've told you at times when I just intently, I'm reading the Bible. I'm intently just coming and praying for no other reason. God, you got to help me in here. I'm starting to think. My thinking starting to be stinking. It's yeah. not good. So something's got to change in here so that I can survive. And then the bottom line is I'm going to continue to do right. Doing right is not dependent on people clapping. Doing right is not dependent on people's reactions. You work out what is right. You decide. You make convictions. A conviction is a settled belief that can't change. So some people are like, yeah, that would be good. But then if somebody says something bad about you, then you change your... It's not a conviction. I'm going to do right. I made up my mind a long time ago. People, if they mad dog me, I'm still going to preach the truth. Doesn't matter. I've been mad dogged by the best. So that's the way life is. So Jesus says, if you'll do this, then you can do the will of God and you can survive. Okay, let's open for some questions then. And I want questions, not comments.
You mentioned, seeking God when you do feel, discouraged, bitterness, cynicism coming.
Yep.
Is there also a component of, reaching out to maybe another pioneer, another pastor, and just kind of, like you said, you don't eat them for lunch, but you just explain, I've been going through, difficulties and been feeling discouraged. You work that out to feel courage and just remind yourself, hey, you're not the only one who suffers alone.
Yeah, sure. Relationships in general. So number one, I would say pastors need to stay in touch with their pastor. I have guys that just simply talking to me for a few minutes, they say, man, my head has come clear. Not because I gave them some, there's something supernatural about headship, the way that God has designed it. So, yeah, it sometimes with pastors. But again, I do stress that it's very easy for, you got to pick the right people. There are some people that, there are some people that should never work at the suicide hotline. Let's put it that way. Be like, dude, I hear you. You should jump. All right? So it could be dangerous. Somebody else.
What are some practical steps I can take to stay refreshed and give every new convert my best and start them with a blank slate instead of...
First of all, give them a questionnaire. Say, are you going to burn me? Are you going to be a silent No. I don't. What you have to understand is that doing right is in cycles, right? Life is up to. I don't know anybody who is perfectly level. But what you have to do is you have to recognize the warning signs in you. And that is why I talk about, I recognize, I think I've mentioned this when I preached on virtue, is I recognize when people's problems are more of an irritation than me wanting to help. That's in me. So that's when I have to come and seek God. So life is like that. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't know anybody who every moment bounds out of bed every day and, with the greatest of attitudes. So you, more to the point is you've got to recognize what are the warning signs. What happens in you that you would not be given your best? That's the way you're putting it. So if you learn the warning signs, then you got to come back to God. But then also, Jake, is that there's a part of ministry I got to do right regardless of how I feel. Right? That's just life. I mean, because of what's going on in your life, because of what's going on in your health, because, there can be 50 different reasons. There are times when the, pastor doesn't really even want to be here, but don't matter. I got to do what's right. I'm doing this for other people. I've had that when family members died. I've had, when I had to discipline my daughter, all kinds of things. It's like, I got to do right. I got to function. I don't have the luxury of going, dudes, like, I'm really stressed out. I can't do the will of God right now. You can see me in September. I don't have that luxury. Right? And that's part of what, when the Bible says, quit you like man, act like man. That's part of it. So I do what's right. And that's valid. That's not hypocrisy. But neither should you continue the rest of your life, I'm doing what's right, without a heart change. Really needs to come from the heart. Zach?
You mentioned before that you and your wife, in times of like financial struggle or something, or the devil's coming against you, you would intentionally give or intentionally do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're dealing with people and you do feel that like wear on your mind and stuff, is there anything intentionally that you do or that you could do?
It depends, because let's be honest, is that there's a huge range of possibilities in why someone would be doing that, right? So you have from the easiest end of the scale of someone who is they're just struggling at the moment, so they got a bad attitude at the moment because, you know, they got bit by the dog, their car broke down, they lost their job, they fought with their wife. So that's low end of the scale, right? So don't take it personal, move on, whatever. They'll be better Wednesday, maybe. That's low end of the scale. Then you have people who are starting to do damage. They're starting to speak. They're starting to cause problems in the church. That's different. Then you gotta strategize. You gotta hear from God. All the way to there are people that they're from hell and they should not be in church anymore, but you got to work out what's the wisest way to deal with them so that the whole church doesn't blow up. So there's a whole range of things. So number one, our instinct should be to pray. First and foremost, pray. Someone's going through a bad day, pray. Someone's starting, I'm feeling resistance now, I pray. And so, you know, there are times that it comes, you know, anybody can be going through things, but there are times when I really sense, there are times I come to church and I pray myself, you know, until we did this building program, everybody used to sit in the same place every time, so I knew where they sat, right? So there are people I know they're struggling. I'll lay hands on their seat. I'm praying for them by name, and people I'm asking, God, help them, heal them. All the way to there are people I know that they are deliberately destructive, or I have a strong inkling that they're involved in something evil, and so I'm praying, God, you gotta expose this, you gotta help me with this, protect the church. I'd rather they be healed. If they're not gonna be healed, then you deal with them. That's your job. So prayer is kind of your first instinct in anything. Probably I would say, Vince, that probably pastoral perspective is helpful if we struggle to you know, what I've learned in ministry by speaking to my pastor is often there are things that I would be ready to move too soon or do it wrong. Perspective, by contact my pastor is no. You shouldn't deal with that now, or you shouldn't deal with that at all, or, you know, different things. So, but then you learn, you kind of build up your own files, right? So you don't have to ask every you know, what kind of cereal should I eat this morning, Pastor, you know? So you learn those things by perspective, I think. That's kind of the thing. Then you also, also depends on what form escapism takes. That's another issue, you know. When I got my very first computer, when I grew up, I was heavy into games, and so, but games used to cost money to play. Well, that's how old I am. It used to cost you quarters to play games, you know. So then I got a computer for the first time, and the guy said, "And it's got all these games on there." So the very first thing I did is I deleted every game from the computer because I knew me. It'd be bad. I'd be like, on Wednesday night, folks, I don't have a sermon, but I got the top score. And part of that can be like, you know, life sucks. I'm not going to do my work. I'm going to play video games. So, I mean, that's a practical for you know, you may need to, if escapism is a problem, you may need to deal with your form of escapism. Mm-hmm. So you weigh that up in yourself, right? Somebody else. Zach?
How can you protect your wife or your family from the same thing?
Yeah, I think what a man is the greatest protection for his wife. If you're not a baby, if you don't, you know, run your mouth over every little thing, your wife will be able to handle it much better. That's a general statement. However, the beauty of marriage is that often God helps you is that the husband and wife are having bad days at different times, right? There are times when I'm feeling cynical and I'm not, you know, and you have a good wife, she can help you. And other times when she is and I can help her, that's, you know, two pull each other. When you both are on the edge of a cliff, that's a bummer. That's not helpful. You need somebody else. So I really think it comes mostly from the man. That in some ways. The other thing is that I don't, I think, didn't we, this came up last week in that, I don't tell my wife counseling details. People tell me, I hear everything, right? I hear the worst of human nature. And God has made men, I can hear the worst of human nature, and then I can walk out 2 minutes later and I can function and deal with stuff. That's called compartmentalization. I can say, all right, that's counseling, now I move on. Right? Women don't have that. Women obsess. Oh, they think about this all day long. And that's what we said last week. Compartmentalization can be bad if you could become a hypocrite serial killer. You know, that would be because you compartmentalize. So one of the things, I don't tell my wife. You wouldn't believe what this person is doing. That's not healthy for her. Okay? And so in that way, you can, there's a certain amount of shielding that you can do in that way. Well, I think the big question would be why, right? So why does this bother us so much? And the real issue, why things bother us so much, is pride and rejection. Those are the two biggies right there, right? So in the first place, if we're filled with pride, is like, how dare anybody not think that I am wonderful? How dare you? That's, I am wonderful. That's what I think. So that will, if you're filled with pride, that'll be very difficult for you to function. The other thing is rejection. When you haven't worked out your value and your worth in life, or you haven't been healed of your past hurts and rejections, when guys haven't worked out their, you know, in pop psychology, your daddy issues, and you are working in the ministry, what you do is you take everything personal. It's a vote on my worth, right? You know, the other night, Wednesday night, the attendance was low. We had graduations and people were sick and it was cold and whatever. And it's like, so if I'm taking it personal, it's like, how dare there be low numbers, right? Oh, I wasn't preaching, so it's okay. All right. You know what I mean? So you take everything personal. It's not everything is a vote on our worth in life. You got to learn that in life. So that's the issue, is that when you come to a place of security, that's why if people are upset with me and it's not something that I did, and I have to be honest about that. You can't just assume anytime someone's upset it's because they're a jerk. But I look at myself, say, I didn't do that. All I've done has been good to this person. They're upset. That's not a vote on my worth. If I am secure in myself, I can still function. I can get out of bed in the morning. I sleep at night. I'm not taking it personal. It's not someone doesn't like me. I am a worthless human being. You see what I'm saying? So that's why you hear me talk about it. Guys, you got to deal with rejection. You have to let God heal you of those things. Because I've been in ministry. I did not have those things sorted out when I first went in ministry. And I was miserable and made my wife miserable in that. Because I did. I took everything personal. That's a no fun way to live. Good.
Taking a lot of heat or criticism as a pastor, is there a point your ego's in check? It's not about you personally. Is there a point where there are individuals in the church that you feel are genuinely trying to undermine your credibility and influence with other people?
Sure.
And if so, how do you deal with something like that?
Well, yeah, how it can be such a broad range. It depends on, you know, it depends on how much influence they have. It depends on the level of damage they're doing. It depends on how overt, you know. So you, on a bottom end of the scale, you heard the saying, Presbyterian says, I shake hands with people every service that I know have been talking bad about me during the week. So, but it's not, they're not hurting the whole church. They're just, their mouth, They don't have a great influence, so you don't worry about that. You can smile, be nice to them, praise God. Who knows? God may heal them later on. Then there are people that they're being destructive, and you can't let that go on. So that's something you work out with a pastor in strategies that sometimes people are damaging. They're not meaning to. It's just their instinct. They damage because they say stupid things. So sometimes by pulling them up and pointing that out. You know, is that what you want to do? Look at the effect here. This convert quit after you spoke. Is that what you want to do in life? You know, some of them can get help. Some of them it's restriction. You know, I won't put up with that. I don't want you dealing with new converts and, you know, all the way to full on confrontation or, you know, perhaps the heights would work better for you. You know. So there's a whole range. There's all many, many nuances in between. The bottom line is, I have to pastor everyone. So I can't let one person hurt the whole church, right? And that's true. That's true morally. That's true violence. That's true gossip. That's true rebellion. You can't let one person hurt everybody else. So I just that's the no fun. Part of pastoring, you've got to get good at confrontation. The skill. I didn't used to be good at it. And so it's a skill. You can do it without bloodshed, amazingly. And so you're going to work that out. Nate.
Pastor, what is the, I guess, the key component in yourself that you can differentiate whether I'm not compartmentalizing or it's spiritual when it comes to dealing with people in the church? You know, sometimes it's like overwhelming obsession, but it was spiritual. You're like, Nate, this is spiritual. You know, I mean, is there a key in recognizing is it me or is it them?
Well, I would say there's two components. The first part of a prayer is, this would be a very practical, what does James say? If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraideth not. He'll give according as he asks. It's my number one prayer. If you ever hear me pray, I'm asking for wisdom more than anything else. So one of the things I got to know me. Right? That's what David says. Search my heart. Show me if there be any wicked way in me. If there's a problem in me, I need to know it. It's in God's best interest to show me. So if we're willing to learn, I think God's able to, he's willing to tell. That's one part of it. The second part, of course, is connection with pastor. That's why guys who are out and never call their pastor, you're insane. Because it's connection with the pastor is supernatural. Something, a cloud lifts when you talk with someone who has dominion, right? When you're going through it, you've lost perspective, yeah. Tony?
You said in doing right, you get pushback. How do you protect yourself from being vulnerable to the pushback?
It depends, again, why? That goes back to Vince's question, right? Is that you, if you're vulnerable, why are you vulnerable? Is that a rejection issue? Is that a pride and rejection are the two biggest factors. I guess there obviously there could be more selfishness, finances, et cetera, but most of our problems really boil down to pride and rejection, which is why Jesus, in this, he spends a great deal of time preparing people for that possibility. So, why does that affect you so much? That's the question. Someone said something bad. I can't even go on. I want to quit the minute. Why does that affected you so much? Why has it affected you so badly? And that's often an internal question. It can be things that are not healed. I went through wicked rebellion. I took over a church that was a ticking time bomb. We went through two major church splits. And I'm telling you, I've come up against black magic witch doctors. These people in the church, they were every bit as wicked. It was so bad, when I would be on the stage, I would close my eyes to praise God. I could at times physically feel someone choking me, and I'd look thinking someone came up on the stage. It was demonic. So went through that, moved on in life, and then the next time I took over a church, I had a, pastor, you need to know what this guy is saying, and it was like I felt physically sick, and I realized there's some stuff that has not been healed. God, you got to help me. The fact of him saying that wasn't the end of the world, but man, how it affected me was, so I had to take that to God. Why was that affecting me so badly, apart from pride and rejection? Because I had things not healed. I was still dealing with bitterness, of old hurts. So that's question is why.
When you're pastoring and say, for example, like some people in the church start rebelling against you, how do you handle that?
Well, lots of different ways. Again, on all these questions, where how do we handle it? First of all, is by by praying, praying for them, praying for the church, praying for my heart, asking pastor's advice. First time you go through rebellion, you've never experienced it before. So probably anything you're going to do is wrong. And so ask the pastor, And so there would be times when I was going through those splits in that church that I would call the pastor and, what I thought I should do, no, don't do that. And he would explain why that would be bad. Let this happen. Wait till, don't do that. That's a whole set of skills. And then part of rebellion is you got to give people, you got to give good people or innocent people perspective. They have to know. Because what rebels always do is they will always... A rebel will never say, you know what, I don't like you because I want to be in charge. That's never what they say. Like Absalom, he wanted to be in charge. But they never say that. What do they say? I'm really concerned. Absalom said, man, if there's some justice around here, I really wish that you could be helped, but obviously the pastor's unfair and he's not seeing it, right? So that's what happens. So then you get people, it's like, is that true that you torture chickens? It's like, no, come on, They'll have something that they'll complain about, so you give the perspective. Often it's a skewing of events that happened. Yeah, I have to leave the church because the pastor, he was screaming at me. He was, it was like, but there were five other people there. Yeah, so you're giving, it's called controlling the narrative. So that's for other people. You explain to them, this is what happened. I sometimes have that. People in the church, they have family members that rebel, and I know that they're saying, and I say, I want you to know what happened. This was the conversation. This was what I said. This is how they reacted, so that they can then form their own judgments, right? So, but... It's a very complicated issue. Rebellion's no fun. That's the bottom line. It's no fun in a church. Good. Those are very good questions, guys. All right. All right, all right. We might do a whole lesson on it, but summer is approaching. If you are a disciple, I'm encouraging you to do outreaches in this summer. That is a skill you need. You can organize your own outreaches, be thinking up ways to find a crowd or create a crowd. You'll speak to Jake, he'll help line you out, but I would encourage you to do that this summer. Okay, thanks guys.